This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
You're now listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kunnison. Even though property is a favourite asset in Malaysia, it was not spared by the pandemic. The property market declined in the first half of 2020, with the number of transactions falling 28% on year and the value of the transactions shrinking 32% on year to about 47 billion ringgit. And in line with that, property player Paramount Corp saw earnings swing into a loss as revenue fell 70% on year in the second quarter. Now, is the worst over for Paramount Corp? To find out, I'm speaking with Jeffrey Chew, Group CEO of Paramount Corporation. Jeffrey, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Good morning. Thank you. And great to be on board again.
So, Jeffrey, I was just talking about your second quarter numbers. They were not pretty, but to be fair, this is something that most companies have faced. Revenue is down 70% on year. You saw a loss of 2 million from a profit of 24 million in the year before. Now, you've been profitable for at least 8 quarters before Q2, with revenue relatively stable. Is Q2 of 2020 the bottom for Paramount Corporation?
Well, let me just describe, you know, in a nutshell, what happened in the first half of the year, first Q and second Q. First Q, we are pretty normal in terms of our sales and also our construction. So we kind of like managed to achieve the normal PBT with the revenue, which is quite normalized for the first quarter of the year. And our profit margin in terms of PBT is generally is about 15%. So we make 15% of our revenue the first quarter. Second quarter, we have completely stopped our construction from March 18 onwards. And it took a bit of time even after the MCO has changed into the conditional MCO and also the recovery MCO. We took a bit of time because we need to actually get the approval for the SOP on the construction sites. We need to get the testing being done for all the workers. So basically, the second quarter, we hardly had really much days in terms of the construction. So the revenue were really very low and we had still a lot of fixed overhead, which is also about 15 to 20%. So in a way, all the profits that we made for the first quarter were used to cover the second quarter fixed costs. In a way, at the end of the first half, we kind of like ended a little bit very low in terms of the profit, you know. So that's a nutshell. And what's really happened is that it's not so much of sales is the issue. The issue is the lockdown in terms of the construction sites. So as we move into the third quarter, our June numbers were pretty decent in terms of production because we managed to get everything back to 90% to 100% in terms of productivity at the site. The third quarter, we will see that is this continuing to go on for another until end of September. Then we will have full quarter of normalized profit. And hopefully the final quarter, if there's no national lockdown or any so-called enhanced MCO at any of our sites, we should be normalized in terms of the second half of the year. So basically, we lost half of the year in terms of ability to perform and generate profits because of the lockdown.
So the expectations right now, as long as things remain the way they are, is that by Q4, you should be seeing some pre-pandemic numbers?
Yeah, I think we are already seeing it in the third quarter numbers. We managed to ramp up our construction and in June and July, August, September, we're seeing everything very pre-COVID in terms of the productivity, and that's how we recognize revenue for our business. In terms of sales, in fact, it actually surprised us. We thought that with the pandemic, people will be very cautious about buying properties. Instead, actually, it was quite a shocking surprise shock to us that when we came back in May and June, when we started to do the bookings and the SPA signing, we got one of the highest in terms of bookings for the month of June, July, and even August was still very strong. In fact, by August, we kind of ran out of new good products to sell and sales came down a little bit. We had about 270 million of booking in June. And in July, we got 380 million. We haven't really seen those kind of numbers in the last 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, Jeffrey, I guess also part of that may have been partially the pent-up demand that could have been there. But also we've seen stimulus measures from the government itself, right? We've seen the home ownership campaign come into play. We've seen low interest rates as well. But, you know, considering the fact that there was a gloomy outlook for the property industry even before the pandemic with the whole overhang situation, what happens when these incentives to buy property end?
Well, it's a very good question. Because the incentives in terms of the house ownership campaign was not something new. It was given throughout last year as well. So again, during last year, we saw demand was a little bit softening compared to the year before. So what really has changed, you know? I look at it and I realize that one of the fundamental things that really has changed is interest rate. Now, you know, Bank Negara has actually brought down interest rate by 125 basis points since last year. So although it's not significantly huge compared to other countries, but the effect is actually starting to change in terms of people are not really asking now, should I buy, should I rent? Because it's cheaper to rent. Now, a lot of people say that it's actually more expensive to rent. It's better to buy because interest rate of mortgage is now running about 3% or some of the pricing you can probably get slightly lower than 3%. But what's more important is the interest rate is expected to stay low for a long time. If you think about the psyche of buyers of properties, now you do not want to commit to buy if you know the interest rate will be down low for a year or half a year. But now they know, and the newspaper has picked up saying that very clear, everybody feels that the interest rate will be down for a long time, 22, 23, or even could be 5 to 10 years. Because of that, in the long run, it's better to own a property than actually renting. And that's where I see that it's actually a major shift in terms of where why people are starting to buy, you know, instead of holding back last year.
But that said, Jeffrey, while the low interest rates are generally good for property, what we're seeing now going into October is the end of the loan moratorium. As a property player, are you concerned about the next few months, the next quarter?
Well, we think that one of the small factors that contributed to the strong sales in June, July and August was because of the moratorium in a way. Because a lot of people have money to actually decide whether they want to put a down payment for a car or down payment for a new house or even for an investment. So that so-called free additional cash flow may disappear. So I think that may have a little bit of a dampening effect in terms of the property sales in December, January next year for the first quarter because people realize that they don't have excess cash. So that is more of in terms of the demand of the property. But we will probably have to expect that we won't have a super sales like the third quarter that we enjoyed recently. But we think sales will probably normalize to pre-COVID in a way. And of course, with the help of low interest rate, we see that the property demand will still be fairly quite strong going forward. I don't see, in fact, I'm quite optimistic about the Malaysian economy. I don't see there's going to be mass default in NPLs, whether it's the mortgage portfolio or the SME portfolio. Like I said, you know, based on the factors that, you know, you look at plantation prices, palm oil prices is actually very close, 10% off the peak from the last 5 years. And if you look at oil prices have gone up over 40 plus and it's quite stable. So that is a too good demand. And demand on exports in terms of manufacturing products from Malaysia, look at gloves, healthcare products and all that. The demand is fairly, very strong in Malaysia from overseas. So all these three factors are really positive. And I don't see any reason why that has not trickled into the economy, into the smaller guys and also the employees. So I'm pretty quite comfortable with the post-moratorium.
Now, looking forward, now you've got net income margins ranging between 11 and 17% over the last five financial years. Are you concerned that with increasing competition over a smaller potential market as people get a bit tighter with their wallets, are you concerned that you're going to have to sacrifice margin for sales?
Well, over the last 5 years, we have been suffering about 1% margin erosion every year. We used to be running at about average of 20%. Now, like you mentioned, we are averaging now close to about 15%. So in a way, the last 5-6 years, the property price have really been stagnant or maybe some, in other words, is good in a way, it's stable. So cost has been rising across, whether it's the labor cost, general cost and land cost and everything that's been rising. So in a way, we have been affected by that over the last 6 years. And I think with the going forward, if the low interest rate is going to be a good impetus for the purchasing of property, we do see, in fact, actually margin improving. Now, one of the things that I shared with my board over the offsite last year was that if interest rate were to go down by 2%, it will have at least a 30% impact, positive impact on the PBT of our company. Hmm. Now, let me tell you why. Number one is that you know that property developer buy a lot of land, right? Then we will spend like 3 years, 5 years to get the approvals for the land. and then we launched it, and it takes a bit of time because of different phases for it. And we probably take 10 years to 15 years to launch a big township, or even 20 years. And those are interest costs being buried in, either charged to the P&L or keep capitalized until we launch. So in a way, interest cost is a big portion of our business. So if interest rate were to reduce from OPR of 3% to, let's say, 1.5, half, we save half our interest costs just on the company itself. And that is already, if I make 150 million, I'm going to make additional half of the interest cost, which is about 20, 30 million extra, or, you know, from just interest cost saving. Now, another factor is that when interest rate goes down, demand will be stronger. When demand is stronger, I don't have to give so much discount. You know, if I can just trim off discount of 1% or 2%, either to the end buyer or to the real estate agent, I will save, from 1 billion sales, I will save 20 million of cost, which is 20 million of profit. So easily, it's already 50 million. Now, as you also understand that we bill based on progress billing. Now, progress billing is also depending on how much you sell. If you could sell everything at the launch within 6 months, then you can collect all your progress billing very fast based on the construction. But today, as you know, the last 6 years, property market is a bit soft. We take much longer to sell the property. And because of that, the collection is also slower. So we are also paying a lot more interest because of that. So easily, I feel that the property developers will really benefit substantially from the low interest rate environment, both in terms of our top line from sales coming in faster, less discount, faster collection of our progress billing, and then our interest cost on our inventory, both the one under construction and also the one that is actually still in progress of a land bank, in progress of getting approvals, those will reduce significantly.
I've been speaking with Jeffrey Chew, Group CEO of Paramount Corp. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Kanesan. This morning, I'm speaking with Jeffrey Chew, Group CEO of the Paramount Corporation. Now, unbilled sales for Paramount as at June 30th, 2020 was about 870 million ringgit. What are your expectations for the end of the year, and how has the MCO relaxation contributed to that?
We were concerned that you know, if the sales doesn't continue on to grow or stay the same way like last year, then the unbilled sales will really go down. So because of the sales was pretty strong the last couple of months, and we are booking, we think that today, we already had sales about 450 million. And last year, our sales is about 690 million. So we think that we have a very good chance to even exceed the last year pre-COVID sales for 2019.
Wow.
So with that sales in place and booked by end of the year, we believe that our unbilled sales will continue to stay at close to 900 million because we lost a little bit of our construction work for one quarter plus. So in a way, we couldn't build. So it's kind of like carry forward. Mm-hmm. So when we add on the same amount of sales the last year, our unbilled sales will definitely move up a little bit to 900 for probably a billion.
All right. And Jeffrey, that 450 million ringgit you cited earlier, are those bookings or S&Ps signed?
Those are S&P signed.
All right. And what projects are driving these numbers here?
Actually, the good thing is that it's not a particular project. That's the reason why I also asked the question, is it a particular project that we did, you know, a good design, a very good price point? No, it's actually across all the 8 projects that we had. There is also a slightly shift in terms of the buying trend, where people now seems to prefer a landed property a little bit more. I mean, not huge, but there's a slight shift because of probably MCO. They want to have more space, more air circulation and so on.
Now, your pipeline for launches for the second half of 2020 has an estimated gross development value of around 640 million ringgit. Last year, Paramount launched projects worth around 860 million ringgit in GDV with an average take-up rate of 73%. What's your current take-up rate and expectations for the rest of the year?
In terms of units, we look at about 70% plus, 75% across the different projects. Some projects are doing better, like, for example, Greenwoods. That's the one in Sepang, all landed residential. That's nearly about 96%. The other lakeside project also landed is about 82%. Whereas the high rise, the mixed development, slightly hovering within 60% level plus. So net-net is about 75%. So it's pretty decent.
You've got 11 ongoing developments with a remaining gross undeveloped land of around 436 acres, with another 69 acres in Penang, and this totals up to a GDV of around 6.7 billion ringgit. Jeffrey, this sounds like a very healthy longer-term pipeline that you've got. But with the property demand already being a concern, are you really going to be able to realise all that GDV?
Actually, we always have been told by a lot of our fund managers and our analysts that we don't have enough land bank. Our land bank will probably last us, 6 billion will last us probably 6 years or 5 years, you know, depending on how fast we grow. Whereas they compare us to other developers where they had land bank would last them 20 years or 15 years. So I always say that, well, that's the strategy we develop. We want to keep lean and mean so that we don't pay a lot of interest costs. So we had only 6 billion of GDV, 7 billion. And we also went into JVs with landowners so that we don't have to carry so much interest going forward. So we think that 6 billion for a turnover of 800 million to a billion sales, it's actually not very much. Okay, it's just nice. And as we proceed on to actually take advantage of a lower interest environment, we may actually buy more land. And that will help us to actually able to grow from the 800 million in terms of sales to a billion plus. So we are actually in a very, very sweet spot in a way, as you know, that we sold our education business last year and we brought in nearly 600 million in terms of our proceeds altogether, the tertiary and the K-job. And it put us in a good position to retire some of our debt and also prepare ourselves to able to borrow when we have opportunity to buy land bank. And we have a plan every 5 years to buy about 500 million of land. We already kind of like got about 300 million of land already committed. So we are thinking about maybe doing a little bit more aggressive going forward so that we can jump from where we are, more of a mid-tier, above top 10 player in the market, to really be in the top 5 or top 7 player in the property market if we do take a very aggressive stance. So to us, we're trying to get the 500 million done within the next 1 year, 300 million plus 200 million. We are actually looking at whether should we do another 500 million over the next 3-4 years as well, if interest rate going to be very low.
Now, as you continue to acquire land, what are you seeing now that could impact your strategy for development going forward?
Well, I think we also are quite cognizant about the oversupply in certain areas, like for example, the unsold, the overhang properties in certain segments and so on. That's real. So we also know that in maybe 10 years ago, there's a big mismatch between supply and demand. There's a lot of demand. There's a lot of people who need a home to stay. But over the last 10 years, we have been building decent amount of properties and that gap is narrowing. So in a way, we also quite careful about buying land. And we think that Malaysia is reaching a point of a little bit closer to maturity in terms of property development. So that's the reason why we are looking at other markets. We have ventured into Thailand, in Bangkok recently, and we are trying to learn and see how our first project is going to develop. It's going to take a little bit of time. We're going to go in slow and steady and learn. And then over time, we'll probably do more projects in that country or perhaps in other countries as well.
Actually, that was quite interesting. I think that was earlier this year you acquired a 49 equity interest in a Thai property developer. I think the deal was valued around 8.4 million ringgit or about there. So, but 8.4 million ringgit doesn't sound like significant exposure. Now, you say you're going in slow and steady. Why go overseas if you're not going to do something a little bigger?
We are quite a conservative company in a way. I mean, we celebrated our 50th anniversary last year. So in a way, we wanted to make sure that we have a joint venture party and we also pick a slightly smaller project to start with. But it doesn't mean that there's going to be one project. If it takes off nicely and we are comfortable with the relationship with the partner, they have a lot more land in place where we can partner and build. So in a way, we just want to make sure that we learn and then we don't get burned in a big way. We are quite fortunate in a way. I think Thailand is affected more, or Bangkok, much more than Malaysia in terms of the COVID. As you would know, that 22% of the tourists come from China, you know, compared to us. So the lockdown has a very serious impact. So we are quite pleased that we didn't do invested in a project of 80 million immediately. We only put 8 million in. So we could actually delay the launch, and it doesn't really hurt us very much.
What kind of contribution do you want overseas projects to potentially bring to Paramount revenue?
We are looking at a 10% contribution in terms of revenue and profits over a period of 5 years. And that we think that over time, it will slowly grow, and maybe we will have a 30-70 by the time 10 years time. You must remember, you know, although we may have invest today, it probably take 3 years for the profits to materialize. So when I say 10 years, it's actually 7 years, you know, mm-hmm. 5 years, is actually 2 or 3 years. Yeah.
And what other countries are you looking at besides Thailand? Does Vietnam come to mind, or Indonesia?
Yeah, we do a very comprehensive research in terms of which of the countries where we go. We have all the scorings that we put in place, and also expert judgment put in place. But what we really like about countries with a good demographic, we like countries or especially cities with a high population base. For example, all the three countries or three cities that we are targeting, one, of course, is Bangkok, Thailand. The other one is Vietnam, Ho Chi Minh. And of course, we also look at Philippines as well in terms of Manila. Those places have population way beyond Klang Valley. Most of them are above 10 million. So in a way, we like cities that are very large, so that when we go in, it's still enough space for us to maneuver, and it's also growing in a way.
Now, Jeffrey, before we wrap up, I want to take a look at beyond property. Now, education is no longer a major interest of Paramount Corp, but you still have a 35% stake in the tertiary education business and a 20% stake in the pre-tertiary education business. Why not sell out completely?
We do feel that we have some potential in that business as well, and we want to continue on to support them. And on the other hand, our buyers also felt that they also want a kind of like a smooth transition with us around. So the buyers feels very comfortable with the price that we offer, and also because we are willing to stay with them for at least 2 years or 7 years. So we are also helping them in terms of trying to make sure that they understand the market well, they are able to position for growth in the future. So that's the reason why, but we have options to actually exit. But we also have an option to actually stay with them as well. So it really depends on how the education market in these two segments perform over the next 2 to 3 years, as well as the outlook for the next 10 years, as well as how our new partners or our new shareholders able to take the businesses to the next level. If they could take it to the next level and we're comfortable with them, we might decide to stay, assuming that they also allow us to stay as well. So it's still a little bit of an open relationship in a way, but the idea is to allow a smooth transition of our exit into the education business.
All right, Jeffrey. And on that note, I wish you all the best, and thank you for joining me on the show today.
Thank you very much for having me on board. Nice talking to you.
I was speaking with Jeffrey Chew, Group CEO of Paramount Corporation, and you've been listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Roshan Karnison for BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U Mobile, Frost & Sullivan Malaysia's mobile service provider of the year.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.